This show is brought to you by Safety FM.
Well, hello and welcome to an all-new episode of Safety FM with Jay Allen. I hope everything is good and grand inside of your neck of the woods as we are hanging out today on Tuesday, November the 5th of 2024. I know today's election day for some, but don't worry. I have an episode for you that you're going to enjoy. We recorded this during Safety Day 2024 by the ACFS. You can find out more information about them at acfs.org. But Amy Wilson came in and gave an update on some things that were going on with OSHA, and I thought today would be a great day to go ahead and play her presentation for you to take a listen to what exactly was going on and what she had to share with the crowd during Safety Day 2024. So sit back, relax, and enjoy this episode of Safety FM with Jay Allen, presenting Amy Wilson from the acfs.org, of what was going on during Safety Day, better saying, during that time. So take a listen right now here on Safety FM.
Around. I know the afternoon session can sometimes be a little hard. Everybody's a little sleepy after lunch, but I did notice they jacked up the AC in here, so hopefully that'll keep you all awake through all this. I'm going to try and keep it interesting. But before I start, if you don't mind, I'm going to go a little off script for a second and talk to you a little bit from Amy, the safety professional, not necessarily Amy, the OSHA person. So I've been a safety professional for probably close to 28 years. Starting when I was still in college, I had the opportunity to work for Johnson & Johnson as an intern, as an assistant industrial hygienist, where I worked for them for 3 years during my undergrad experience, and I learned a lot of fantastic information. I had a lot of hands-on sampling experience, you know, by the time I graduated and got out into the real world. And one of the things that we're seeing now, and this is not just an OSHA thing, this is an industry-wide thing, is recruitment and recruiting people into our industry, into the safety and health industry, and specifically into the industrial hygiene profession. It's becoming harder and harder to find folks, qualified industrial hygienists, folks that have any experience or any background. I'm going to be honest, OSHA's gotten to the point where if you've got a 4-year science degree and a pulse, we're going to try and make you an industrial hygienist. And I know, you know, we're not the only ones that are feeling that same pinch. So just as I'm taking just a couple minutes as a personal aside, as a safety and health professional, to really encourage folks to try and put forth internship programs and try and recruit folks into our field and into our industry, if that's something that your company is willing and able to do, to please promote those programs. For OSHA's side, about 5 years ago, maybe a little before the pandemic, we implemented a new position in the agency called the safety technician. That is now our entry-level position. Someone can come in with no safety experience and really learn the ropes from the ground up. And the goal of the safety technician is to, you know, have them come in. And they're going to be doing a lot of kind of the admin work around the office, things like taking the gov cars to get the oil changed and things like that. But they're also going to be going out there and shadowing our compliance officers in the field and learning hands-on from them, so that when a compliance officer position opens, they're primed and ready to go to step into that role. So that's one of the things that OSHA is doing on our end to try and promote the safety and health profession. But, you know, I just wanted to put that out there, and really, you know, we really need to, and I know Michelle touched on it in terms of, you know, participation in your local professional associations, ASSP, AIHA, ACFS, getting, you know, that level of participation and promotion. And I know all of those groups do offer scholarship programs and things to help people, you know, get interest and gain interest and traction in getting us into the profession. So that's just my two cents before I get started on the OSHA stuff. I just wanted to put that out there, something that I'm seeing, because I want to see our profession continue to grow and continue to thrive, because I believe what we do is fundamentally important. It's a fundamental right for people to be safe and healthy policy, and I think it's incredibly important work, and it's something I've dedicated my entire career to, as many as you have done so as well. So I just wanted to, you know, kind of put that out there. So that being said, I'm going to go ahead and get started. As we mentioned, my name is Amy Wilson. I'm a certified industrial hygienist. I'm the compliance assistant specialist in the Orlando area office, which is our newest area office. We've been around about three and a half years now. So as a compliance assistant specialist, my role is the outreach role. I've been with OSHA for, it'll be 25 years in January, so you can kind of say it's not a spring fling. I've been around for a while. I think I'm going to stick with it at this point. So let me just get started. What I'm going to go over with you guys is a little bit about some changes that have come about with the current administration to OSHA's vision, what we're trying to focus on. And then I'm going to talk a little bit about our enforcement priorities, some of our inspection priorities and strategic initiatives, rulemaking. Some of the rulemaking that has seen movement in the past year and a half that you might be interested in. A little bit about what compliance assistance and outreach resources that we have available to you to use, that we encourage everybody to use. And then also, you know, how to get a hold of those resources, how to get a hold of us. So those are the main points of what I'm going to talk about, that I'm going to hit on. So OSHA's vision is to establish safety and health as a core value throughout the nation and every workplace in America. And when I say a core value, a lot of people will say, oh yeah, we make safety a priority, 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 priority. It's always a priority. But you know what? Priorities change. Values do not. And making safety part of your company's culture and part of your company's value systems is what OSHA really wants to see. Is we want to make it so that safety and planning for safety and including safety in your processes and in everything you do is second nature. It's not something that you have to stop and we got to make sure we consult the safety person. We got to get the safety person. No, it's part of the second nature in everything that you do. So that's what we want to see. We're also focusing on empowering workers, particularly workers, disadvantaged workers, workers who are vulnerable and in positions and making sure that we strengthen their voices, making sure they understand their rights, and that if they're a worker in the United States, it doesn't matter their background, where they're from, what their status is, they are protected because they're humans and it's a human rights issue. And then also enforcing those workplace protections and making sure that there is no floor under which people have to work in conditions that are unsafe and putting their lives at risk every day. And then also, I know folks are, you know, don't want to think about the enforcement side of OSHA, it's the scary side of OSHA, but for those companies that are doing the right thing, you want OSHA enforcement, because what OSHA enforcement does is it levels the playing field between companies that are doing the right things and companies that are exploiting those workers, the workers that work for them, and we want to make sure that companies that do that are never have an advantage, a competitive advantage against the companies that are doing the right thing. So that's one of the things that OSHA enforcement accomplishes out there for those companies that are interested in doing the right thing. So OSHA's continuing mission with the our state partners and our partners in industry are helping to, you know, dramatically reduce, you know, workplace fatalities and injuries. We've seen, you know, a significant reduction from when OSHA began to now, but our work is not done. And in the past year, with the 2022 BLS data, we have actually seen an uptick, and it's going in the wrong direction in terms of those fatality numbers. So we still have a lot of work to do out there, and we want to make sure that we get that number trending back down and in the direction we want to see it go. And we need your help doing that, because going to be perfectly honest, and this is the first OSHA administration, I think, who's come out and admitted this out loud, we are not going to enforce our way to compliance. We're not going to enforce our way to zero fatalities. We need your help. We need employers' help. We need industry help to get the word out, because safety is the right thing to do. And we're just not going to get there by enforcement alone. We don't have enough people. just not going to happen. So getting that message out is extremely important for those reasons. So how are we going to do this? How is OSHA going to accomplish its mission? So, of course, as I mentioned before, setting and enforcing those standards, enforcing anti-retaliation rules, making sure that workers have a voice and they're not afraid to exercise that voice, making sure employers are aware that it is illegal to retaliate against a worker for making a safety complaint or expressing concerns about safety and health in their workplace, and providing outreach and training and resources to folks who are trying to do the right thing, who want to do the right thing, making sure that we support those folks with training materials and resources, making sure that's out there for folks, and then ensuring that our state program partners are just as effective as our federal OSHA partners. So one of the major changes that I do want to make sure that you folks are aware of is how OSHA is organized. This change came about actually as of this October 1, is we did go through a regional reorganization. We did this because we started to see that we were not really focusing the resources we needed to focus on the Southeast, where we're seeing a large uptake in worker population, and we want to make sure that we balance out our resources so that we're reaching our stakeholders and we're reaching the workers effectively. So what has happened is we have combined regions 9 and 10 out there in the West, and they're now the San Francisco region. And we have created a new region smack in the middle of the former Region 4 and Region 6. It is our new Birmingham region. The other thing that we're changing is it's no longer numbered regions. It's now based on the city in which the regional office is located. So Boston, New York, Philadelphia, Atlanta, Birmingham, Dallas, Chicago, Kansas City, I know I'm going to miss one, Denver, and now San Francisco out there in the West. So that's how we're OSHA is reorganizing. So one thing to pay attention to, if this is the former Region 4, now the Atlanta region, we are now just North Carolina, South Carolina, Georgia, and Florida, minus the Panhandle. The Panhandle now goes into Birmingham. Birmingham is now Mississippi, Alabama, the Panhandle, Tennessee, Kentucky, Arkansas, and Louisiana. So that's a kind of a major change for OSHA in the way we're organized. So I just want to make sure that everybody's aware of that. So here in Florida, these are our area offices that cover Florida. Please note that the Mobile office is now part of Birmingham, so that would be a different region. So this is the contact information if you need it to reach out to any of our Florida area offices. And then also, these are our state plan states. Currently, we have 22 state plan states. These are states in which they have their own OSHA program that is approved by OSHA and partially funded by OSHA, but they are the ones that actually go out and do the enforcement. They have their own compliance officers. They have the option to go beyond, above and beyond, but they must at least enforce the same regulations that OSHA enforces. And one of the examples that everybody is commonly aware of is Cal-OSHA. Cal-OSHA tends to go above and beyond what OSHA requires, but they have to, you know, be at least as effective as the federal OSHA standards. And then we also have 7 state plans that only cover state and local government employees. So Florida is not one of them, but there are 7 out there. So I'm going to go into a little bit of OSHA's enforcement stats and current enforcement stats, and then also some of our initiatives, some of the things that we're focusing on. So if you look here, we've got our inspections by federal OSHA by year. You can see there's kind of a significant dip there. It was kind of trending downward, and that's following along, unfortunately, a trend of lower staffing over the past, I'd say, 10 or so years, where we've had, you know, reductions in staff. Oftentimes, it's mostly just folks leaving, retiring, and just not being replaced. We haven't actually let anybody go. It's just we're not replacing people that are leaving at a rate at which they're leaving. So we've seen some reduction in staffing. And then, of course, that outlier there, 2020, that's the pandemic, where we had to pull back operations, as many of you also did as well. So coming out of the pandemic, we've seen that we hit kind of rock bottom for OSHA in terms of staffing. We were at our lowest staffing numbers for our compliance officer staff since the beginning of the agency, really. We were down below 700 nationwide. So we made a big push, a big hiring push. So in 2022 through early 2023, we hired almost 200 compliance officers nationwide. And we've been working those folks through the training program and getting them out in the field. So you're going to see an uptick in inspection activity based on those new numbers. So you can see now towards the end there in 2022, 2023, those numbers have gone up. So our top 10 violations, this is only federal data. This is not state data, but you're going to see they're probably very similar if you did incorporate that state data. So fall protection, number one, HAZCOM. And you're going to see it along the lines of those major severe injury-related type standards that prevent those severe injuries, amputations, loss of eye, those types of injuries. And then, of course, you know, things like hazard communication, which is a somewhat complicated standard that folks sometimes struggle to be in compliance with. So you see a lot of violations related to that. In the construction industry, what will come as no surprise, the top four are all fall related. Fall remains the number one killer of workers in the construction industry and actually across all industries. So it's not a surprise that the largest number of violations are going to be related to fall type hazards and those standards. So that shouldn't necessarily be a shock to everybody. So specific data for Florida. So Florida, last year in 2023, we had 106 work-related fatalities statewide for federal OSHA. That's down a little bit from 111 in 2022. Over half were construction-related. And then divided then between general industry, agriculture, and then if you look at the table there, it kind of breaks it out among some of the industries and in general industry. And so if you're interested in those sort of statistics. So those are our numbers from last year, where we're at. So based on these hazards, these types of hazards, is how OSHA determines our strategic enforcement efforts and where we're going to be focusing our energy and our resources. So we're looking at, you know, inspections in cases of, you know, where employers are showing plain disregard, intentional disregard, and we're really trying to focus on those bad actors, make sure that they're, you know, our enforcement actions are appropriate for folks that are really showing no interest in protecting their workers and resulting in worker fatalities. So we're focusing on that. We expanded our severe violator enforcement program, and we expanded the criteria for that to try and, again, make sure that those bad actors are being held accountable for what they're doing. And it's all part of that leveling the playing field process, making sure that people that exploit their workers are not at a competitive advantage. We're trying also to reach our underserved and vulnerable workers. We're given permission to certify UNT visas for workers that are cooperating in an OSHA investigation. That doesn't mean we give the visa, it just means we certify it. It still has to go through immigration to actually certify it, but if they're somebody who is instrumental in a case and we don't want to them to feel like they can't cooperate with us because of their immigration status, we want to make sure that we can protect them under those circumstances. It's a case-by-case situation. And we're focusing on heat illness prevention, not just through our heat NEP, but also we have an initiative looking specifically at the H-2A visa workers who are working in agriculture, who are disproportionately affected by heat illness in the work that they do and in the way they work. So we're focusing on that. And then also we've proposed a heat rule, which is, I'm sure, we're going to go into a little bit more detail with that because that's something that folks are very interested in. And then another step that we've taken is we've also put out a severe injury reporting dashboard where you can, and I'll, the next slide is going to talk about that a little bit more, but it's a way for you to look up by industry, by event type, by establishment type, state. You can run these types of stats, numbers, see how your company compares, see how the companies that you want to do business with compare. And it's basically, it's putting that data out there. Now, it's does not include personal PII, any work, actually, you know, any data that could possibly be, you know, traced back to an individual person, but it gives you kind of an idea of where we're seeing these severe injuries and what what industries we're seeing different types, and then also, you know, using that data to compare, you know, how maybe your company is stacking up or the companies that you do business with. So some of our national emphasis programs, some of these are familiar, they've been around for quite a while, but I'd like to point out a couple that are a little newer to the list. We do now have a nationwide fall national emphasis program. This came out in 2023, and basically what it does is it ties together what was kind of a patchwork of regional emphasis programs and basically makes it consistent nationwide, and it covers all industries, not just construction, but also general industry, maritime, shipyard, agriculture, to the extent that that we can. So it brings it all under one national emphasis program umbrella. And really, this is just in response to that kind of sobering statistic that falls remain and have continued to remain the number one killer of workers, and really haven't been able to move the needle on that. And so this is a step that we've taken in attempts to try and do that and to try and reduce those fatalities. So other emphasis programs that you're going to see out there are heat illness and warehousing and distribution centers. This is in response to massive growth in that industry. Of course, with massive growth comes massive growth in numbers of injuries and illnesses and fatalities. So in response, we're kind of digging into that industry and making sure that they're complying with what they need to comply with to protect their workers, looking at things like fork trucks, hazards, material handling hazards, heat, ergonomics, you know, your typical hazards that you're going to find in a warehousing environment, struck by hazards. Those are all things that we're focusing on in that emphasis program. As always, all of our emphasis programs are available if you'd like a little light reading on our website. If you find yourself having trouble falling asleep at night, you can rock yourself to bed gently with one of our enforcement programs. No, I'm just kidding. But no, all of that is available. If you have an enforcement an emphasis program that is relevant to your industry, please do go and read it. Also, go and read OSHA's directives. They're our playbook. It's how we do our business. They're great information for how for double-checking and checking your programs to make sure you're in compliance. So I encourage you to do that. Regional emphasis programs, these are local. This is for our Atlanta region, and you can note it's focused on industries that are found commonly in this area. This is typical for regional emphasis programs, things like poultry processing, auto parts manufacturing, which is big in our Carolinas and in Georgia, and looking at that food processing, maritime. We have a lot of ports in our region, so this is our common regional emphasis programs that you're going to see out there. So, again, these are also all available on our website if you want to read up on them and check and see what may have any impact on your business, on your company. Recommend that you do so. So next we're going to go into a little bit of rulemaking. So OSHA has seen some movement on different rulemaking that we've proposed that has been out there. Some of it's become final. So we're going to go over a little bit of that just to kind of update you and make you aware. But if you're ever interested in knowing or checking on a particular piece of rulemaking that you want to follow and you want to check up on it, please do check out reginfo.gov. You can look up any regulation, see where it is in the process, you know, and see where the milestones are, what's coming up, what are the anticipated next steps with that particular piece of rulemaking. So if you've got something in there that's particularly interesting to you, to your company, you can follow along and keep tabs on it through this website. So just some of OSHA rulemaking that's come across news. So these are some of our completed rules. These are rules that have become final. The improved tracking of workplace injuries and illnesses rule that went into effect this January 1, 2024. So it's basically retaining that requirement for all establishments to submit that form OSHA 300A data to us, and then also basically making some updates to the classification system used to determine, you know, what industries are covered under that requirement, and then I'm not going to go into a huge amount of detail on it, but that's a rule that has become final order recently. And then also the worker walk-around representative designation process. And this is basically clarifying, a worker or certified bargaining unit's right to specify a worker or union representative to accompany the OSHA inspector on a walk-around, and that person may not necessarily be an employee of the company that's subject of that inspection. So that's something that has been a bit controversial. There's, there's definite legal maneuverings going on. Folks are concerned about that, but, you know, please do reach out if you have any questions about this or if this has come up in your workplace and you want clarification. We're certainly happy to answer any questions about it, so please do reach out. I know there's folks that are concerned about it. So next up is an update to hazard communication standard. This is to further align us with GHS, the Globally Harmonized System, which I believe now is in its 9th iteration. This aligns us with 7. So we're a little behind, as one might imagine. The rulemaking process is an onerous one, but we're trying. We're trying to keep us as up to date as we can, because we know that Global Harmonized System helps you guys, especially folks that have international clients and customers or take shipments internationally coming in and labeling and all that stuff, and trying to keep it all on the same page and making it easier for folks to use. And it also codifies some of the requests for interpretations that came up after the previous 2012 GHS realignment. So it's kind of taking some of those questions that came in up and that we issued interpretations on and making those part of the existing standard. So those are some of the updates to that, and became effective this past July. We're kind of in limbo a little bit. We expected the final rule in 2024. It hasn't actually come out yet. But what this is doing is essentially it's clarifying our requirements for fit of PPE and actually making that implied that PPE needs to fit in order to be effective. And what we're finding is that people need that extra clarification to actually do the right thing and make sure that PPE is fitting folks appropriately. And a lot of times what we're seeing an expansion of women in the workforce in construction industries and across in the manufacturing industries, and they're finding that PPE is not fitting them properly. And improperly fitting PPE can sometimes be more of a danger or an additional danger than actually wearing than the hazard that the PPE is supposed to be protecting you from. So we want to make sure that, you know, manufacturers are working with employers and employers are providing PPE that is appropriate and that fits appropriately for all the workers that are using it. And then we're also working on the Powered Industrial Truck Design Standard update, and this is part of a OSHA project that is pretty wide-reaching, where we're going through a lot of OSHA standards are based on industry standards that are extremely old and outdated. And what we did is we made them part of the standard. We actually wrote it in there that, you know, standard 1965 version is the version that we're going with, and now it's a long time since 1965, and there's been a lot of updates and a lot of changes. A forklift from 1965 looks absolutely nothing like a forklift that you're going to find out in a warehouse today. There's been a lot of design changes. There's been a lot of updates, and it's an ongoing effort for us to try and modernize some of our standards and make them make sense with the current industry and what we're finding. And this is one of the ones that we've pulled it all the way through to almost the final stage. We're just pending that final rule. Again, it was expected in August, but I think some other things kind of took precedence over it. being the some things that we're going to talk about now that are in the proposed stage. So under OSHA's proposed rule stage, these are rules that we've put out there and basically said that this is what we're going to be trying to pursue in rulemaking. Some of it seems a little like OSHA's wish list. Some things haven't seen movement in a while, but I'm going to talk about ones that have seen movement recently in the next couple of slides. So the one that's getting the most press and probably the most interest is our proposed heat rule. OSHA has never had a heat standard. We've historically had to rely on the general duty clause, which is very difficult to for us to enforce and generally requires somebody needs to be either injured or killed in order for us to successfully pursue a general duty clause violation in a lot of cases. And it shouldn't be that way. We need to be more proactive, and we can't just be running from fatality to fatality because, you know, lives are being lost here. So what this does is this now puts forth a standard, potential standard. Now, what has been put forth is the basic, you know, draft, for all intents and purposes, standard that OSHA is putting forth. And this is based on, we've done a lot of research, we've taken comments, we've looked at state plans that have their own heat programs, we've gotten information from industry, from worker advocacy groups, from trade groups and associations, and we've put all that information together and came up with a draft proposed standard. So now that that standard is out there, this is kind of giving you an idea of what we're proposing, the basic requirements of the standard, and at what point they're going to kick in. So that, I'm looking at very, very tiny on the screen here. So what we're looking at are the various provisions in the proposed standard, when they kick in, what we're considering that initial heat trigger is now we're looking at aligning with ACGIH in terms of it being a heat index of 80 degrees is that initial heat trigger, and then the high heat trigger being that 90 degrees heat index. So those are the 2 points that we're looking at this time. It is now open for comment. I encourage folks, if you have a comment and you want to be part of shaping this proposed rule, please use that function. We want to hear from you. And we don't just want to hear negative things, too. We want to hear success stories. If your company or your industry has success stories in how they've successfully initiated a heat illness prevention program, what has worked for you, we want to hear about that because we need that information because people are going to come at us saying, this is impossible, we can't do this. And we want to be able to say this is possible. People have successfully protected their workers from high heat hazards, and we want to make sure that we capture that information just the same as folks that are you know, being negative about it and not wanting this standard to go forward. So we really need to hear from you, and this is your opportunity to help shape the future and help shape, you know, a safety and health standard. So please do take advantage of that. You know, submit your comments electronically. There will be, I'm sure, hearings, and this is early in the process. It's going to be a while before this becomes final. And of course, as with every caveat, it's all going to depend on administrations and priorities as things go forward. And I'm not going to get into any politics, but that's going to weigh in on how long this takes to get to the final point. But this is now your opportunity to help shape it. So please do submit your comments. Another proposed rule that has received a lot of press and attention is OSHA's emergency response rule. We're still working on the fire brigade rule. That is what we've got, and that's all we've got in terms of protecting firefighters, and a lot has changed since then in terms of equipment, policy, procedures, gear, you know, protective gear, and generally how emergency response is done has completely changed, and it's now out there, and it's all over the place, and this is an opportunity for us to try and bring it all together into one standard. So we're working on that as well. And that's moving forward. We've already completed the comment stage, but we're now entering into that hearing stage. So the hearing is scheduled for November 12th. So if that is something that interests you, I do recommend that you follow that link to attend that meeting and that hearing for, virtually, and see what where we're going with that and what folks have to say about it. So that's really where we are with our rulemaking. I just wanted to hit the highlights on a couple of rulemaking that has had some movement, like I said, in the last couple of years. There's plenty more out there that OSHA's working on. We're constantly trying to work on improving and getting things through that process, and it's, a lot of times it comes down to a matter of resources on how fast we can move on something or what goes forward and what doesn't. So I just stay tuned and keep yourself abreast of the changes that are coming. So moving and changing gears into OSHA's compliance assistance, I'm going to talk a little bit about what some programs that OSHA has that are available for folks and some resources that we have. If you haven't been to OSHA's website recently, please go take a look. We have a ton of information there. If you have folks that are bilingual and their preferred language is Spanish, you can read our entire website in Spanish just by clicking a little link at the top. So make sure that folks know about that and they can find great information there in languages that they understand. We also, we respond to, thousands of calls, emails, outreach activities like what I'm doing here, and then also helping small businesses through our consultation program. So those are all part, all things that fall under our compliance and assistance umbrella. OSHA has a lot of publications available. These are great training resources and materials. They're available in different languages. So please do avail yourselves of these resources that they're out there for you to use. Again, as I mentioned, a lot of them are in Spanish. Our OSHA poster, I think we're up to 30-some different languages now. A lot of different languages you can get our poster in. Everything from Spanish, English, Haitian Creole, Tagalog, Chinese, Vietnamese, Japanese, as you please, everything. We're always adding more languages. We want to make sure that we're as inclusive as possible and people know their rights. And I mentioned before, OSHA's on-site consultation program. I want to give a little shout-out to our friends over at USF here in the state of Florida. They're the folks that administer our consultation service for us. The reason we do that as a third party is we want people comfortable in using it. It's completely separate from our enforcement side of the house. And, in fact, our enforcement folks are not allowed to ever see that report. We never see it unless you want to give it to us. But we never do see that. We cannot request it. It's between you and the consultation service, but it's a great opportunity if you know of a business that you're working with that is struggling, that needs safety and health advice, maybe don't have the resources to have their own in-house safety folks or to even hire a consultant, you can use the consultation service, which is a free service for employers, 250 employees or less, with higher hazard industries get priority booking for their consultation visit. But I highly recommend that you use it. They're great folks. They're very, very helpful, and they're very passionate about what they do. So please do reach out and avail yourself of that resource if that's something you need. Dovetailing into that is OSHA's SHARP program, our Safety and Health Achievement Recognition Program. I like to call it VPP Lite. So it's for smaller businesses who may not have the resources to join our VPP program but still want to have an outstanding safety and health program and want to be recognized for that program. So OSHA works with them to do that. These are for small business employers that have used their on-site program consultation program, taken that report, taken it to heart, made all the recommendations that the consultation service recommended for them, keeping their injury and illness rates below their BLS average for their industry. Can be part of our SHARP program. Industries that are in, or employers that are in our SHARP program are exempt from certain programmed OSHA inspections, just like our VPP sites. So it's a great opportunity. There's been a lot of wonderful success stories. So if you go to our website, look at that SHARP program, you can see some of those success stories. And right about now, we have a little over 1,000 SHARP program participants active in the U.S. currently. Additionally, for small businesses, we have some publications that are really devoted for small businesses and helping them come into compliance, small entity compliance guides for specific standards. These are all available for smaller businesses. That I definitely highly recommend that you take a look at these. Additional cooperative programs that OSHA has, I mentioned our SHARP program, but also VPP, our strategic partnership program. If anyone here has a large project coming up, something that's going to span a year or more, please talk to me about strategic partnerships. Folks that participate in our strategic partnership program see orders of magnitude lower injury and illness rates on their job sites, and it's really focused on helping, you know, the GCs bring those subs and those subs of subs into safety culture and getting them on board with you know, being safe and being safe on your job site. And because what happens on your job site is sometimes a reflection, it can be a reflection on you, and you don't want that coming back at you, and you also want to protect people working on your site. So it's a good way to do it and to partner with OSHA. So if that's something you're interested in doing, please reach out to me. Happy to talk to you about it in more detail. So those are some of our cooperative programs that OSHA has. Training and education. Folks are familiar with our outreach training program, our 1030-hour cards. Also our Training Institute Education Centers. And folks that we assist through our Susan Harwood grants that help us come up with training materials and training programs. Our OTI Training Education Center here in the state of Florida, again, is USF. In fact, they have a table in there in the vending room. You can go talk to Mylene. She's got great information on upcoming courses that you can take. They offer a lot of the same courses that you can get at our OSHA Training Institute. So these are training courses that are OSHA approved. I don't want to use OSHA approved because we don't approve anything, but OSHA-approved curriculum and topics, about as close to OSHA-approved as you can get. So I definitely recommend that you reach out to them and check out, see what their courses they have available. They have a lot of courses that are available virtually. So if you can't get all the way out there to Wesley Chapel where they're based, you can take their courses virtually. But do bear in mind that if you're going to take a virtual course, you got to be on camera and in front of your computer the whole time in order for it to count. So make sure you plan your activities accordingly. So I'm sorry, some of the slides, we lost some of the wording here, so I'm trying to see. So some of our other outreach events that we do throughout the year, some folks recognize these events, our fall stand down, our trench safety stand down, Safe and Sound Week, Labor Rights Week. So these are all coming out up throughout the year, outreach programs that OSHA focuses on. If you're having a stand down, a fall stand down, a trench stand down, any kind of safety stand down, and you'd like OSHA to participate, we're happy to do that. I'm happy to come out, talk to your folks about that particular stand down topic and assist you with your stand down. Please reach out. Happy to do that. Some of the ones I want to call out specifically are heat illness prevention campaign. So this is just getting the word out there and making sure that folks understand what they need to do. Water, rest, shade, you know, all the elements of a heat illness prevention program. We also have our fall protection campaign. Again, this is an awareness outreach, making sure folks, pay attention to fall hazards in their workplace. In 2021, we had 378 fatal falls to a lower level out of almost 1,000 total construction fatalities. So you can see it's a significant portion of the fatalities that we're experiencing in the construction industry. So again, as I mentioned, if you're having a stand down, please do reach out. Happy to support that event with you and be your partner with that. So please do let me know. Another thing that I want to talk about, and this just came around, was Suicide Prevention Awareness Month in September, and specifically suicide prevention in construction. We are seeing a absolute epidemic of suicide in construction. So in that previous slide I mentioned, we had about 1,000 worker fatalities, and that generally, that number stayed pretty much the same year on year. The 1,000 worker fatalities due to physical hazards, our focus for electrocution, falls, struck by, crushed by, for every one of those, there are 6 suicides in the construction industry. So it's really becoming a major epidemic in that industry, and a lot of companies are recognizing that and instituting suicide prevention programs. OSHA has resources for that, help you have those conversations, help you have those difficult, sometimes difficult conversations, and help you support your workers, support each other, and you know, help us really turn the ship around on this and get folks help that they need. So that's something that, you know, I definitely encourage you to look into as well, resources that we have and that we've partnered with, like CPWR and other trade associations through our alliances to make, to put out toolbox talks and all kinds of references and information to help you with your programs. I want to call out, there's a company here in Florida. I'm not going to name the guy. I want to necessarily, they're a paving company out in the Tampa area. You may know of them. They are very, very proactive with suicide prevention and mental health. Their president himself will come out and talk about his own personal experience with suicide, and it's incredibly moving to hear him talk about it, their program and what they're doing to support their worker family and the folks that work with them is really very inspiring. So definitely it can be done. Folks are doing it, and I recommend that you please, you know, consider including those type of programs for your employees as well. OSHA Safe and Sound campaign, where we focus on safety and health programs and making sure that every workplace has a safety and health program, a comprehensive safety and health program. This year we tried to kind of make it fun with finding and fixing hazards using a JHA. Job hazard analysis, giving folks information on how to do an effective JHA. So that was this year's focus. I believe next year's focus is going to be emergency response and preparedness. So get ready and get those emergency response preparedness programs up and running. If they're not already, dust them off, tweak them up. A little more about safety and health programs. And these are some information that as safety professionals, folks that are trying to make the case for safety in the workplace, these are some good resources for you to help have that conversation with your leadership or leadership of companies that you're working with as to why safety matters, why safety is important, and how it benefits the bottom line. What are some of the things that are improved by having a great safety program? You're not just saving lives and preventing injuries and illnesses, you're also improving your company's bottom line potentially through a number of different ways. I mentioned one of the biggest things that I mentioned, a lot of folks, people are having trouble hiring. So recruitment and retention is a big part of that can be improved by having a great safety program. People want to work where they feel safe, where they feel like their employer cares about them. They don't want to work where they don't feel safe. So when you're trying to recruit and you're trying to retain workers, having a great safety program can be a part of that, can be a huge part of that. So these are all ways that you can help sell safety when you're talking to your leadership or when you're talking to vendors and clients and companies that you work with that you want to promote safety to. Finally, please sign up for OSHA's Quick Takes. If you sign up for the Quick Takes, you'll be in the know on OSHA stuff, and you won't have to sit through this presentation ever again because you'll know what's going on. I'm really sorry. Some of it's a little dry. I try to do the best I can, but so sign up for Quick Takes. That way you'll always be in the know what OSHA's doing with our rulemaking, with our initiatives, with our programs, our resources, and what's available for folks. So please do avail yourself of that resource. It is actually very informative. You can sign up at our website at OSHA.gov. And then also, please feel free to contact us. Thousands of folks contact us every year asking questions, getting clarifications, getting interpretations. You know, we'd rather you reach out to us and get clarification on something and get an answer than move forward with something that could potentially hurt someone or injure someone or, God forbid, kill somebody. So please, you know, reach out to us. We're a resource. We're happy to help. People call me all the time. My number's on the under compliance assistance specialist. You can call me directly if you really need to. Please do. I'm happy to take that call and help you all out. So that's the end of my presentation. Does anybody have any questions? I know I went over a lot. Back there.
I have a lot of my clients that we've been using the OSHA Heat app.
Yes.
And it's been fairly useful for them with the move to the new proposed heat standard. Is it going to be, are there going to be changes to the recommendation of the heat after you're just taking those things and making them law rather than something vital?
Well, part of what's in the heat app is based on NIOSH. The heat triggers that we have are based on that action limit and exposure limits that are coming out of NIOSH. So and that's generally the basis of that heat app. So they are kind of walking hand in hand. Now, as it pertains to the actual standard, as I mentioned, the standard is a proposed standard at this point. It's going to see changes as it moves through the process. So, but I can imagine we're going to want all of our products to align with whatever that final product is. So that we may see changes to publications, we may see changes to training resources that OSHA has, to things like our heat app, just to make sure that everything is lockstep and following that final version of the regulation. So yes, you may see changes to that, but I don't think you're not going to see changes that are going to affect its usefulness. It's still going to be useful for what it's for, but you know, it may be tweaked a little bit to align, you know, when making sure all of our products are, you know, in step with each other.
How many OSHA employees do you have in Central Florida?
In Central Florida, total, we have 14 compliance officers in the Orlando area office, and I believe there's 20-some over in Tampa-ish. I don't have the exact numbers off the top of my head, but that's about it for our Tampa Orlando offices. We also have an office up in Jacksonville, which is also going to be up in that like 20-some range. So, yeah, so about, I would say between 40 and 50. And then, of course, Fort Lauderdale down there as well. So I don't have an exact number for you, but that's where we are generally. It's not a lot when you consider the total number of businesses that we have under our jurisdiction and that we have to visit, which is why I mentioned before, you know, we need everyone's help to help get messaging out there, to help those employers that want to do the right thing that aren't going to be necessarily touched or reached by our enforcement program. Yes.
So, myth or not? Truth or dare?
I didn't sign up for this.
when OSHA finally got their office in Orlando, mm-hmm. we started seeing more focused inspections from OSHA on some of the bigger job sites.
Yes.
And what we were being told was that OSHA was pulling permits from the county to do these focused inspections.
I don't believe that's where we're getting our data from. I think we look at things like there's a report. What's that? I know I've been out of enforcement for 2 years and I've forgotten everything.
Like they were pulling permits, you know, construction permits. Mm. That's where you were getting your visits from.
I don't believe that's where we're getting our data from. I mean, our C-target list generated from, it's gone right out of my head, the thank you. From the Dodge Report. That's generally where we get our C target lists from. And when we get a targeting list, we apply a randomizer to that list just to make sure that we're not being perceived as targeting anyone in specifically. We apply a randomizer and we just go down the list from start to finish. So no one is being targeted specifically. No one site is being targeted specifically. If you end up on the list, if it seems like you're on the list multiple times, it's because you may have multiple employers at that site, and we may be visiting those individual employers. So that's why you may see us come there more often. But yes, you are going to see an uptick in enforcement activity now that we have, you know, folks that are more local to. Cause previously, folks were having to come all the way from Tampa out here to do inspections, and it's one of the reasons we've been fighting to have an area office in this area for, gosh, 10 years, trying to get that happen. They finally, you know, gave us the green light to do it because it was really needed. just with the expansion in this area, the amount of construction going on in this area, you know, we really needed to provide that level of service of having a local office. So I don't know if that answered your question, but I tried. Okay, sort of, kind of, maybe. Yes.
So I don't know if you can confirm this, but I heard a rumor from a very reliable source that the director of the Orlando office is saying to give violations big time.
Is what?
He is directing the co-shows to give violations in Orlando.
We're directing the co-shows to find hazards where hazards exist. We're training our folks to recognize hazards. We have a young staff in the office. I'll give you an example. Most offices I work with, maybe there's two or three new people, and most folks are there maybe 10 years or so, and then we've got a couple old timers. While in our office, we've got only a couple old timers and a lot of very new people. So there's been a little bit of a learning curve. As you might imagine, when we hired 200 people in the span of about a year, that's 200 people that we had to squeeze through our training program and through our courses, required courses at our training institute. So it's been a bit of an uphill battle for us to get those folks trained and get them out doing inspections. So you may see an uptick in violations as they're learning more and they're learning more hazard recognition. You know, when we go out there and we do an inspection, it's an objective. We're not going out there trying to gig somebody. We're not going out there to punish people. We're not going out there to find we're going out there to protect workers. That's the main goal. And we're looking for hazards, and we're looking for workers exposed to those hazards, and we're looking to make sure that employers correct those hazards so those employees are no longer exposed. That is the goal. You know, a lot of folks may not know or may not realize OSHA violations do not go to OSHA. Penalty amounts don't go. That goes into the general treasury. OSHA's budget is set by Congress. It has absolutely nothing to do with how many violations we issue, the price tag of those violations, or any of that. And that being said, if you do have enforcement activity with OSHA and you are issued violations, we highly recommend that you come in and have an informal conference and talk it over with us. Talk about what you've done in good faith to correct that situation, and we'll work with you on that. We oftentimes see penalty reductions. There's things that we can do. If you're making a good faith effort, we will meet you halfway. Anybody else? All right. Well, thank you.
The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are those of the host and its guest and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of the company. Examples of analysis discussed within this podcast are only examples. They should not be utilized in the real world as the only solution available, as they are based only on very limited and dated open source information. Assumptions made within this analysis are not reflective of the position of the company. No part of this podcast may be reproduced, stored in a retrieval system, or transmitted in any form or by any means, mechanical, electronic, recording, or otherwise, without prior written permission of the creator of the podcast, Jay Allen.